Hey, what's going on, family? Welcome to another episode of the Niso Technico Show. Glad to have you here listening, enjoying this talk, this discussion. So this episode is a little bit different. I don't know, you guys may have heard on the last episode that I had a few episodes that I was going to release that I hadn't before. And this one is about critical race theory. So I made this about a half a year ago, June 7th. And around this time, there wasn't a lot of discussion on this. So I made the episode. However, I started having some technical difficulties. I've had been having some technical difficulties with this platform at that time. So there's a few episodes that just didn't get posted as a result. And when these issues got fixed, I was already had a bunch of other episodes I was releasing. So this is one of the few that didn't get there, but I may be commenting on critical race theory in the future. And not just that, I also feel like there's some points that I brought up that are still relevant that I haven't heard many people address. So still, I hope you guys enjoy it. And as always, if this has any value to you, please share, tell people about it. And let's pay these bills. What's going on, family? Brother Technico here. Still getting some of these episodes out. Having some issues still with transferring my content over. So for the time being, I'm going to give you guys some more content here. What I want to talk about today is really important anyway. It's not something that I think I can just kind of push to the back burner. There's not too many people that I see within this community talking about this as of yet. But let's go ahead and get into it. Critical race theory. Now, why this is important is because we kind of have this movement going on amongst what we call conservatives in the schools, removing certain pieces of history, removing certain episodes of slavery, removing the history of race and oppression, saying that it's not providing an equal ground and not providing an equal atmosphere for the white students. It makes them feel uncomfortable, makes them feel like they've done something wrong, et cetera, and they feel like it's not beneficial. They also feel like most of that history is irrelevant to the here and now. And it's based on those reasons that they have a big issue with the critical race theory. And now, family, let me tell you, I'm not necessarily an expert on this critical race theory. This is not one of the positions that I personally support. I would support something more like what Dr. Edward Nichols, you know, with his axiology. I think that's a much better way of kind of explaining certain things. And then with that, applying the history and the data and everything else that kind of goes with that. And there's an article that I'm going to share with you guys because I feel this article really touches on some of the issues that I see with it, and it's coming from, you know, a white person's perspective, which I think is pretty powerful in this case, because naturally I feel that I would be able to see the value in telling the truth about how people acquired their power, telling people about how they came to be, how we came to be here. You know, it is oftentimes my argument that one of the reasons why we have no respect in this world is that because people do not know our history. They don't know of our contributions. It has been long told and it's been long passed over for the last almost 200 years. Actually, yeah, over a little over 200 years now, that we've been told this lie that black people have contributed nothing. And as a reason for that, there's, you know, it's been almost deduced as to why we find ourselves in this position that we're in today, why we struggle, why we go through all these different things. You know, we never look at the history as having any effect. We don't look at Jim Crow. We don't look at, you know, multiple promises that were made to the black community, which I'm gonna get into, but we don't look at those things. And very quickly, just to cover a bit, just to give you a bit, like a brief synopsis on what a lot of the opponents to critical, because there's a lot of opponents. You got it from, you know, what I consider paid, you know, black, you know, church leaders and stuff like that. You have this video. That's what really got me going. You got this because they love to show black people that agree with one of their points, you know, and it was a video about, you know, I'm not teaching my daughter anything. I'm teaching her she can be anything that she wants to be, you know, not based on the color of her race. Because the way that people are describing the critical race theory is that they're saying that that theory says that race means everything, that defines you, you know, and that certain situations, you know, can be racist, you know. And I believe PragerU, he offers an example that, you know, if a white and black person walks into a store, if you, you know, deal with the, you know, black person, then you believe that they're stealing. If you deal with the white person first, then, you know, you believe that there's more value. And I think that's a really, really terrible example. I don't think that example offers any context as to what the heck, you know, could be happening or why that's even the example. That's just the example that's thrown out there. But it's something that's used a lot of times in campaigns. Like if you look at a lot of the propositions, when you have you have a proposition, you have opponents, and you have your proponents, right? And they usually do things like this. They usually try to use rhetorical ways to validate, you know, whatever the other person is saying, or to dumb down or oversimplify some things that they may be saying. And I think there's a lot of good things that could be said there, because for me working in retail for the short period of time that I did, you know, the one of the ways that we deal with shrinkage, that's what they call it, shrinkage, people taking things, is that you offer somebody customer service. You know, so if you think somebody, you know, could potentially be stealing, because it could be viewed badly if you're like following them or watching them, the idea is to, you know, provide excellent customer service and to, you know, continue, you know, and to continue doing that, because it kind of sets the precedent, or it kind of sets the, you know, your habits for while you're working, that if you're always applying great customer service, then everybody's going to see that, everybody's going to like you, then nobody's going to think that you're biased, so that's a good thing. And then if you do see something, you can kind of observe, you give your customer service, and then you can kind of go back and, you know, you can let loss prevention know, hey, there's somebody here that may be a little suspicious or whatnot, or whatever may have you. This is the case. And the reason I say that this doesn't usually provide any context is because when you're dealing with stores like a Macy's or JCPenney's, sometimes even in Nordstrom's, depending on your location, you can get, like, you'll get customer service like that, because those are what the policies are. When you start to go to places like Coach, when you start to go to places like Chanel, Cartier, you start to go to places like that, and you don't look like you have, like, if people assume that you can't afford what's in there, they're not going to offer you any customer service. The most you'll get is maybe a greeting. And that's why I also know that I worked a lot of security at stores like that, in very high-end places. So I've been around a lot of high-end places. I see, like, because there's a way that they want to deal with people. And a lot of that has to do with, like, when you receive particularly customer service now, you know, that's definitely, you know, as a result to how people were treated in the past. You know, this didn't necessarily occur all of a sudden. So I wouldn't even say this is like one of your most natural ways. But because you're providing some context, because you have a history of stores being discriminatory against certain people, the way that stores now have to go about dealing with folks is different. You see what I'm saying? But that doesn't take out the validity in the statement that the critical race theory is saying. It may not be a perfect example, but it is an example with some validity nonetheless, because you have a history. What Wikipedia would call storytelling is actually history. Now, let me stop before I really go full out and defend this critical race theory, because, again, this is not one of those things that I would super support like that. But we have to understand a thing called a precedent. And if we allow certain things, if we allow this critical race theory to fall for the reasons that they're trying to give, saying that they're trying to implant thoughts of racism in the brain, then we don't have, then they have the precedent to defend themselves against when we bring up the fact that racism is inherent. Racism isn't something that you necessarily have to think about every day. You can just simply act upon it because of this is the way the society works. You know, social norms, de facto laws, so on and so forth. We have to be very, very important, you know, very, very aware about not losing these battles, because then we can't defend ourselves appropriately when the time comes. And that's why I'm really, 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 really speculative about this whole critical race theory, because of how sloppy it does appear to be in certain angles. And I can do another podcast on that. the issues, you know, the issue is the basis of which the conservatives and people have chosen to attack this, because the positions that they've chosen to attack are very, very valid. And as a result, they're not even asking them to change certain things, or as far as I know, but the reaction is that they were going to take out these histories, to take out these feelings. So because you don't agree with, you know, the conceptions of race, even though that was something that was created by white people, a whole system was created on this conception of race. You know, things carried out on a conception of race, on this conception of race, benefits given or not given based on that criteria. You know, we're going to pretend that there wasn't a Naturalization Act in the 50s. We're going to overlook. That was less than 60 years ago. So we're going to overlook a lot of these details. And we're going to overlook. We don't even get the real history of slavery. We get a really truncated, chopped up mess, episodic mess of what slavery actually was. And I'm not in favor of that whatsoever. I'm not in favor of people, because you wouldn't ask the Jewish people like that, you know, ask the Jewish people to go ahead and let Nazi Germany not teach the Holocaust, not teach the history, for us to not teach what happened to them about their circumstances. We went through a lot worse than what they did, and for longer. But people don't look at it like that, because most of the time they don't know the history. They look at the just the whips and chains and just the work. They don't look at the incest, the rape, the mutilation, the cannibalism and auto-cannibalism that definitely occurred, that people like to sweep under the rug. But in the Nat Turner's book by... name will come to me. Styron. I was thinking Styron Woodley. Even in that version, you get the details of what actually occurred. You have documentation by Frederick Douglass seeing them sell... pieces of a knuckle or feet. But this, you know, but we, if people who study lynching understand that, you know, mutilating the body oftentimes came with the lynching, particularly the genitals. Like, but we're gonna ignore all of that. We're gonna ignore the real history of black babies being used as bait. We're gonna ignore that. See, these are the things that I have major issues with. You know, and the biggest thing, the biggest crime, because when they talk about our slavery being around 18th or even 19th century, that's disrespectful, because you're not talking about how these forces came in and eroded Africa. You know, but we can have compassion for how USA and Russia basically manipulated Asian powers such as Korea, Vietnam, China. We can look at that and say, look, yeah, we understand that there are other forces involved, you know, putting these people against each other. But we can't acknowledge that about Africa. We don't even want to talk about the wars. When they go in and they split Africa up in the Berlin Conference, the wars, the different things that had taken place on that soil, the number of lives that were lost simply for that. Not even talking about Transatlanta, but the things that further crippled Africa. We don't want to talk about that. So, and what oftentimes happens, and I'm going to leave it here before I get to this article, because this article I think is good, and it's one of the better ones out there, dealing with the main focus, dealing with the issues, not allowing somebody to say, oh, this is a problem, and then allowing that to be the justification to commit a crime. Because for anyone else out there, erasing history would be a crime against humanity, a crime against those people. We force other people to look at the things that they did, but it's only but natural that the dominant culture or society that is trying to keep this thing going would feel this way. And they're very, very threatened by the critical race theory because of the points that I articulate, because the points that I articulate are points that black folks have been making for a very, very long time, and it deals with the real crux of the issue. As much as we can deal with the law and the litigation behind their oppression, the thing that we cannot overlook is that it started before that happened. Family, you've heard me talk about Code Noir. Noir is black in French. Okay? About the Pope mandating and saying what would be allowed to happen, who you would be able to reduce to servitude. Being able to judge people based on saying, okay, if you're Catholic, then you're civilized, you're everything, and everyone else is not because you don't know the true God. And that was a very, very interesting thing that PragerU brings up, Judeo-Christian Foundation, and how certain thing and how critical race theory was un-American. Thank you, PragerU, for exposing yourself. But let me get to this article, because this article really, really sums up the finer points. So this is by USA Today, Kendra Hurley, an opinion contributor. Okay. But critical race theory, my Texas school sanitized history and facilitated injustice. Okay. June 5th, 2021. My suburban Houston middle school held an annual Civil War day. White eighth grade girls loll about the cafeteria dressed with hoop skirts, and the principal, a self-professed Civil War buff, gave an animated presentation casting Confederate soldiers as misunderstood underdogs. Perhaps because my parents were transplants to Texas, my mother had the wherewithal to recognize Civil War Day for the inappropriate celebration of plantation culture that it was. She let my sisters and me know how warped she found it all, and that the Civil War was foremost about slavery, a fact that was routinely whitewashed in Texas schools right up until 2019. So keep in mind, family, some of the things that they're defending, and it's more than just the statues. It's about the way that they want to remember their life, want to remember their culture, their history. Don't give a damn about it being true or not. So this is something that's not very, very new. And many, many schools did not want to acquiesce. So we forget a lot of these social changes have happened recently. It's not a very long time. We like to look at everything as if 50 years ago was such a long time. It's not in the grand scheme of things. But let me continue. I can only imagine what the few black families at the school thought of the event, but lately I've been trying. Oh, because over the last few weeks, as numerous states and Republican lawmakers have taken the steps to block schools from teaching the enduring legacy of slavery in the U.S., it has become clear at my school sanitized approach to the Civil War was not the quirky brainchild of one principal gone rogue. Rather, it falls neatly in line with a larger philosophy that educating kids about the outsized role racism holds in American history and its policy is unpatriotic, divisive nonsense, as Senator Mitch McConnell called it. As one who grew up with an education, McConnell would probably be deemed patriotic. I am here to point out the ridiculousness of such thinking. What divides us is not teaching the truth, but leaving kids to fill in the blanks for the vast inequalities that they see around them. What divides us is allowing those kids to grow up into ignorant leaders. Let me pause for just a second before I continue, because there's some things that we have to cover. Like that is real. That is real. The biggest damage, John Henry Clark used to say this all the time. The biggest weapon that they used against us, what does the most damage, are not the lies, but the omissions. When you take away the history of a people and say nothing, you allow people to assume or infer that they had nothing. That is one of my biggest issues and why that has not been corrected and why we have not seen that to be. Look how far back we are. We have people really trying to remove the history of the legacy of slavery from the history books. This is real. This is what's happening. How the hell are you going to get to some truth about Africa? You won't. And it's funny that it's not just me, it's not just my community now that's starting to see this. And I never thought I'd see the day where I would say something like this, but the proof is in the pudding. And this wouldn't be the first time, family. You recall this. You recall this during the election when I had some communication and some conversations with those from the Asian community who had a different perspective. And it was new. But I do see some things changing. Now, that doesn't mean that this is a vastly different situation than what was in the past. The history will tell you we've had a lot of people, you know, from regardless of what they come from, be able to see reality for what it is. The overwhelming reality that is, though, that there are a lot of people that are willing to conform. Like, but that's not necessarily their fault. Like, there is a responsibility, there is a culpability there. But when I'm saying that, it's not necessarily their fault. Like, that's what we do as human beings. We're social creatures, you know. As much as we have the capacity to lead, we also have the capacity to follow. That's how we're hardwired. So just looking at us from a biological standpoint, you know, and sometimes that's the best way for me to make sense of what's going on, is to look at it, you know, from a biological, more scientific way, when I can't see through the moral side or the ethical side. But we see, it's not just me who sees that there's an issue here. And it wasn't anything new. Her mother could see that there was an issue with celebrating Civil War festivals, not giving the true history of what it was about. And for both sides. You know, it wasn't so much that the North cared about the position of the African folks, but it was because of, A, what they were trying to do with the industrialization. You know what I'm saying? And the money and profit that they were making. Like, you're going to put yourself, what, like, United States was going to be way, way, way far behind if they were going to maintain slavery. I mean, dealing with the rebellions, that costs money. That's a major reason. Another part is when you're getting into the industrialization aspect of slavery. And if you look, like, just look at what serfdom did to Russia. You know, so they may have had money, they may have had certain things, but as far as technology, they were far behind the rest of the world, and it cost them. And it cost them, particularly when they got into an issue with Japan, who Japan didn't necessarily want a conflict with Russia. But when the technology is better, when the training is better, and the people are not as oppressed, you can kind of, you know, you can kind of see what happens. Because Russia had its vast variety of internal issues, so you could see the United States seeing themselves, looking at the landscape, and like, hey, we got to get our stuff together, and we want to really boom with this industrialization, but we can't compete with just the North, and we definitely can't do it if the South is making all this money, you know, the way that they do it. Like, we're just going to be disadvantaged. And I don't want to continue too much on, because you know me, family, I go on tangents. So let me just continue. Making history. Next part. At Texas public schools I attended in the 80s, we learned that freed slaves were allotted 40 acres of land and a mule. What we did not learn was that the federal government quickly overturned that agreement, returning those acres to their previous white owners. Absolutely. You guys also didn't learn about the Black Code, so where people is just like, hey, if you didn't find a place to live within 6-9 months, you would have to work for somebody on these lands for a certain set period, and your kids would be divvied up. And if you tried to get your kids back, you could be charged for a fine up to $500, which a dollar back then was worth about $32 today. So just keep that in mind. But let's continue. We were told that America is a land of opportunity for anyone willing to work long and hard enough. We were not told that for decades, many unions excluded Black Americans, thwarting them from the opportunities, pay, and work protections offered their white counterparts. And of course, we never studied how banks and governments made purchasing homes and property an impossibility for many Black families, foiling them from accruing wealth that would have appreciated over years and generations. But is he rehashing these hard truths really useful, some ask? Can't we just vow to do better moving forward? The field of cognitive science provides a ready answer. The rehashing can help a lot. Studies suggest that when people aren't provided the reasons for differences in their world, such as why the net worth of a typical white family is nearly 10 times that of a Black family, why we routinely default to what Andrea Simpion, a psychology professor at New York University, calls it shortcut explanations attributing quote-unquote inherent qualities to groups of people. Bad teaching, bans on critical race theory in schools, narrow reality, and sells out kids. In 1982, the year I entered middle school, for instance, a jaw-dropping 57% of Houstonians in a Kinder Institute survey said that when a main reason that black Americans had, on average, worse jobs, income, and housing than white Americans because most black people don't have motivation or willpower to pull themselves out of poverty. Oh, my goodness. So you just see certain stereotypes rehashing themselves over and over. Like, who the hell worked harder than a slave? But I digress. You know what I'm saying? You had the willingness and motivation to work hard and invent shit like the cotton gin. Fuck Eli Whitney. He didn't do shit. We know this now. You know, but you can invent things and come up with stuff to make your life easier so you don't sell my family. You do it anyway, but no one's unmotivated. No one's more lazy. And just on another thing, because I'm already on that point. You know what I'm saying? And much credit to Kendra Hurley on this, because this is refreshing. You know, it doesn't have to be from a black perspective. That's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is just some objectivity. You know what I'm saying? Like, yes, purchasing homes, you know, unions excluding black Americans. I guess that's what some of the so-called, or these conservatives, I don't even call them so-called, whatever, these conservatives want to call storytelling, what Wikipedia even calls storytelling, and not based on facts and reason. I guess that doesn't apply. I guess the history doesn't apply to reason. I guess the history doesn't apply to facts. So those things not happening doesn't cause anything. Oh my goodness. So, you know, much credit to her. Research suggests that kids are especially prone to favoring these kinds of stereotyping explanations, which makes it more likely for kids to regard inequities as natural rather than offenses to fix. For targeted children, shortcut explanations may become self-fulfilling, limiting what children believe they can accomplish. The antidote to all this, education, provide kids with the full historical context for the differences they see. Children fill in the blanks. Simpion points to a published study he co-authored in which children learned about a fictional planet which has two groups of residents. With one group being far wealthier than the other. When researchers asked kids why that was, most guess it has something to do about the residents, like the wealthier ones were smarter. Kids who explain things in these terms generally consider disparities fair. When researchers told children what they claimed was their true explanation for why life was so different for the two groups, a remarkable divergence occurred. Kids who received explanations regarding the qualities of residents mostly continued to accept the status quo as inevitable and acceptable, but children given historical explanations, like the gold had been discovered by one group long ago, and they were more likely to say the disparities were unjust and needed to be fixed. This past year, the Black Lives Matter movement has provided many white Americans with a crash course in the long-standing injustices inflicted on black Americans. An annual survey conducted by the Rice University's Kinder Institute for Urban Research suggests that in the town where I grew up, that's having an impact. Between 2019 and 2021, the share of white Houstonians who agreed that black, quote-unquote, black people in the U.S. are still a long way from having the same chance in life that white people have increased by more than 20%, the biggest increase seen since the Institute began asking the question in 2013. More Houston residents than ever before believe that poor people are poor because of circumstances they can't control, and 80%, and that the government has a responsibility to help reduce those inequalities, the researchers wrote. Thankfully, my old middle school no longer does Civil War Day. Since my days there, we have accumulated ample evidence that the kind of biased history education I received and that others are fighting to preserve is actually a recipe for preserving inequities. We now know that a clear-eyed understanding of how these things became unequal is a key first step to creating a more just world. The question for parents, schools, and policymakers then is to no longer how to level the playing field. It's whether we are willing. And that's it. Kendra Hurley is an independent journalist writing about kids, policy, and equity. Previously, she was a senior editor of the Families and Poverty Project at an Applied Policy Research Institute at the New School. So that just gives us a little bit, family, you know, and once again, give Kendra Hurley a lot of credit. You have to be brave to speak out on these things because it's so easy to speak, you know, to stick with the status quo, as she says, but to really question why things are the way that they are. And just for a moment, family, I'm going to go bring something up. It's one of the books I've been reading. And it's just kind of going over the slave states. Hold on, give me a moment. Let me just set by date. Date. But essentially, it's so easy to assume, you know, without giving the context. And we saw our scholars do that a lot in the 19th century when they used to talk about, you know, black folks in general and the kind of, like, why we are the way that we were and why it didn't seem like there was anybody intelligent. And, you know, the reason why Count Volney was wicked, was considered wicked. Where the hell is it? Oh, give me a second, family. And can't find it. Hold on. Well, I know I got some screenshots. So give me a moment. Because I keep some stuff, but when we're talking about Olmsted, and Olmsted wrote, where the hell? Did somebody get in my phone? Oh no, here we go. I just missed it by a lot. All right, so A Journey in the Seaboard Slave States by Frederick Law Olmsted. You know, and he has some bits in there where he's talking about, you know, why the slaves are in the position that they're in, because the assumption is that they're backwards, that they were savages. This is the stories that were being told. He calls Volney wicked because he asserts that, you know, black folks were at the dawn of what we call today a civilization. I know. So let me see. No, this is about how they were, like, how the kids used to play auctioning black children and things of that nature. That's irrelevant to this topic. Under the searching gaze, the man and boy were a little abashed but said nothing. Their appearance had little of the repulsiveness we are not to apt to associate with the idea of slaves. They were dressed in gray woolen coat, pants, a waistcoat, color cotton net cloth. Just to tell you guys what I'm reading, this isn't helpful, but it's saying, you know, stuff like, on pressing for him the reason for his discontent, he said after some hesitation that he'd rather live where he could be more free. A man had to be too discreet here. If one happened to say anything that gave offense, they thought no more of drawing a pistol or a knife upon him than they would kicking a dog that was in their way. Not long since, a young English fellow came to the pit and was put to work along with a gang of Negroes. One morning, about a week afterwards, 20 or 30 men called on him and told him that they would allow him 15 minutes to get out of sight, and if they ever saw him in those parts again, they would give him hell. They were all armed, but there was nothing for the young fellow to do but move right off. What reason did they give for it? They did not give him any reason, but what he had done. Why, I believe they thought he had been too free with the niggers. Wasn't used to him, you see, sir, and he talked to him like free-like. and they thought he'd make them think too much of themselves. He said that that the slaves were very well fed and well treated, not worked over hard. They were employed night and day in relays. The coal from these beds is of a special value for gas manufacture and is shipped for that purpose to all the large towns on the Atlantic seaboard, even to beyond Boston. Again, like what I was talking about. If you got slaves being able to do all this stuff for you, then you're not paying the same kind of costs as other folks are. Anyway, and is delivered to shipping at Richmond about 15 cents a bushel, about 30 bushels to a ton. Given, I asked how he knew how they had been obtained and whether they were reliable. No, I don't know anything about it. But if there are anything unfavorable to the institution of slavery, you may be sure that they are false. This is but an illustration in extreme in matter in which I find a desire to obtain more correct but definite information on the subject of slavery. What's going on, G? He is usually met by gentlemen otherwise in large mind and generous qualities. A gentleman who was a member of the Union Safety Committee of New York during the excitement in which intended the discussion of the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 told me that he was passing through Virginia this winter. A man entered the car in which he was seated, leading in a Negro girl whose manner and expression face indicated dread and grief. Thinking she was a criminal, he asked the man what she had done. Done? Nothing. What are you going to do with her? I'm taking her down to Richmond to be sold. Does she belong to you? No, she belongs to blank. He raised her. Why does he sell her? Has she done anything wrong? Done anything? No, no fault. She's no fault, I reckon. Then what does he want to sell her for? Sell her for? Why shouldn't he sell her? He sells one or two more every year. Wants the money for her, I reckon. The irritated tone and severe stare with which this was said. I'm sure. Because it's such a normal way of life, right? Like, what the fuck you mean? Why he's telling her? That's what you do. I'm sorry, family. You can't read this shit after, but you go crazy. This is just what happens. Can I find something relevant? Because this is, yeah, sometimes I take little screenshots of these notes. Each Negro marks his meat by cuts. Yeah, this is basically when they talk about meal and how they ration out bacon. Like, you know, because they fed them like slaves. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not slave, like dogs. You know what I'm saying? Let me read you this here, because this is how they do it. This is just how they think the dog breeders, okay? I was assured, however, that this was very rare, that generally the slaves were well provided for. Always a lot. Now, Olmsted is not country. He's an Englishman, but... just allow me my moment. Always allowed a sufficient quantity of meal and generally of pork. Were permitted to raise pigs and poultry, and in summer could always grow as many vegetables as they wanted. It was observed, however, that they frequently neglect to provide for themselves in this way and live mainly off meal and bacon. If a man does not provide well for his slaves, it becomes known and he gets the name of nigger killer and loses the respect of the community. The general allowance of food was thought to be a peck and a half a meal and 3 pounds of bacon a week for all the slaves. This was observed is as much meal as they can eat, but they would be glad to have more bacon. Sometimes they will receive 4 pounds. But it's oftener, that they get less than 3. It is distributed to them Saturday night, or on a better managed plantation, sometimes on Wednesday, to prevent their using it as a... Stop. But here's something I can use. Thank you guys for being patient through me going through this stuff. And what I'm speaking to here is about the education and about what happens when there isn't any context. And Kendra Hurley kind of speaks to this when you're talking about, not only on one side does one side get to assume why one side, you know, isn't getting as much stuff. If one side, if all they ever receive is that you ain't shit and never gonna be shit, then... it's, you know, it could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, if people say they can never do something, then you mentally block yourself. And you see that, and we talked about this before, where I talked about there was a ban of importation of slaves, and they got into the point where they were breeding slaves. Later in this book, they talk about that, right? Additionally, what would happen is that the slaves that they would bring in that were fresh, that had some sense of history of what was before they came here, so you couldn't buy into the lie that you wasn't shit, didn't come from nothing, because you just came from where you came from. Much harder to get some people to believe some things than it is to get somebody and start teaching them these concepts as a baby. Teaching them these things as a baby and teaching them with the other little kids and teaching your kids while you're teaching these kids, this is why the way that it is, because these niggers need you. They can't take care of themselves. They just like babies. If you just left them out there, they just die. Like they, if we didn't come along when we did, they'd be dead. So we just decided to take them in, and then just because we took them in, we put them to work. Like, that's the story they would like you to believe. And that's the story that Kendra Hurley is defending from. But another things were done. If you were well-to-do off, if you were one of those black folks, we talk about this all the time, family, about blacks that had different positions in slavery, because it wasn't, there were free peoples. Let's look upon how these black folks were taught to look upon these freed individuals. To say that an education, being taught by your oppressor certain values, can't be effective. Let's just get into it. With such influences upon them, with such character, with such education, with such associations, it's not surprising that Southern says that the condition of the slave who is subject to a wholesome restraint and notwithstanding to his improvidence is systematically provided for is preferable to that of a free black. The free black does not, in general, feel himself superior to the slave, and the slaves of the wealthier. Just get this, family. Get this. Let me repeat this. Just so we can get a good feeling, and then we can start to also unpack where a lot of the hatred for this bourgeoisie come from. Some of them is warranted, some, but not all. But let me read that again for you. The free black does not, in general, means generally, not everyone, for most part, feel himself superior to the slave. It means he don't think that he's better than the slave. How can you think I'm better? I have an opportunity you do not. How can I be better than you? That's how they think. In general, and the slaves of the wealthy aristocratic families consider themselves in a much better and more honorable position than the free blacks. Their view of the matter is said to be expressed thus. They're the free niggers. Got nobody to take care of them. Anybody think about that Uncle Ruckus? See, this is that shit motherfuckers didn't catch about Aaron Magruder. That's the kind of things you didn't catch about these characters. About what these characters represent, even from a psychological standpoint. You know what I'm saying? You have the extreme, the middle ground in Gramps, and you have the other extreme in Riley. But nobody even looks at it like that. You know what I'm saying? You got, he has a very classical, like, mulatto, assimilating class last name. I forgot what it is, but we miss all that shit. Dubois. Let me continue. It is for this reason that slaves of gentlemen in high character who are treated with judicious intelligence and who can rely with confidence on the permanence of their position, knowing that they will be kindly cared for as they grow old and feeling their own capacity to take care of themselves, do often voluntarily remain in slavery when freedom is offered to them, whether it be at the South or North or in Africa. A great many slaves have been freed and sent to the North after remaining there for a time and said to have returned longing for the, like the faithless Israelites, for the flesh pots of slavery on their own accord to Virginia to report of the manner in which Negroes are treated there. The difficulty of earning enough to provide themselves with the luxuries to which they have been accustomed is the unkindness of the white people to them, and they want, and the want of that thoughtless liberality and payments to them which they can expect here from their superior has not been such as to lead to the others to pine for the life and of an outcast at the North. So we even see that Homestead is even in agreement with this. Like, it's better for these Negroes to be enslaved. Like, you know what I'm saying? In the terms of their character, like, how could they ever seem to be, you know, equal to black folks? I mean, white folks. How could they ever be equal? You know what I'm saying? And look at what happens. You know what I'm saying? They can't figure out a way to take care of themselves. Like, let's ignore the fact that, you know, Africa has been attacked and ravaged and motherfuckers is pulling all the resources out. And you can't, you know what I'm saying? You're talking about establishing yourself, but you're establishing yourself from the ground up with nothing. And there's other forces there controlling the shit. You know, so you're in a situation to where, you know, you don't want to go back into these binds, but then they literally, it's like they ship you out to an island with no food and say, what would you rather be? Would you rather be in slavery, or would you rather be in this island with no food? You know what I'm saying? At the same time, you're dealing with people who know no other way of living. Like, you didn't give them any skills. Shit, at least when they deal with certain inmates, certain prisoners, they got programs to give them a certain skill or a trade. You know, got at least a diploma program so they can get onto the world and attempt to do something. Just out there, all you know how to do is be a slave. You know, and that's just one perspective. You know what I'm saying? That's something else that we have to keep in mind, because there's a lot of things happening during this time. A lot of free black people. Like, you're talking about 1850. You know, how many black folks are doing this? You got Harriet Tubman, got Frederick Douglass. Shit, you're just about to get into, if I'm not mistaken, Nat Turner and all this other kind of stuff. Like, you have a lot of unique and very significant individuals who are of African descent. But again, you got to read through some of this garbage that they're going to try to push on you, because they're going to try to push it on you. But yeah, I digress. I'm going to take a break here. I'm going to talk more about this critical race theory in totality. Hopefully that story, the newspaper article, kind of got us going. But yeah, just go on from there. So family, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Once again, please follow me on Twitter, which is Niso Technico. You can also find me on IG, which is just Technico. A little bit more active on there as of late, but more advertising things like this, like the podcast or whatever may have you. Also, after this, I'm getting back into throwing in the outros. I make my own outros. I make my own music. And for other content creators or other people who may want some music, I offer those services now as well. The reason I say that is because I've always said that my goal is to make this information as unfiltered as possible, as real as possible. And I didn't want to be in a position where I had to change my message or alter my message to kind of cater to whoever may be supporting this. You know, I wanted to keep this as real and as honest as possible. So it's like a social enterprise, so to speak. Another concept I've been getting really, really familiar with, because I offer services to make sure I can continue to benefit my community and offer things like this, which is entirely free, free game, et cetera, et cetera. So just throwing that out there just so you guys know, and tech out.